Phillies fans. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999, and at our website, stevepick.com. Bringing you 3 hours of horse talk and more. For those that I think, knock on wood, hoping that this is the case. I think whatever programming issue there was, the replay was not turning up, but it was this morning. So for those that were having trouble getting the replay for, I don't know, like 10 days, 2 weeks, kind of a weird, and they had to chase, you know, it's all ball bearings. it's all programmed by the computer. And so I guess something was amiss because you were missing the replay. You see what I did there? I know. You just. The conversation points today, a little bit of the usual Wednesday stuff, including Dick Powell. I put out the late pick three. And let me actually give it to you for those that are not Twitter bound. Here, a quick shout out for Dick's pick three play, 7th, 8th, and 9th. We'll take the 7th at, I think, about 45. 3-6-9 with 2-4-6 with 2-5-11. 3-6-9 with 2-4-6 with 2-5-11 if you want to play the late. You can play the late pick three. You could maybe just play the late double if you want. 3-6-9 with 2-4-6. Tina would like that because it's got, you know, sequential. What's the word? Is there a word for that? 3-6-9, right? And 2-4-6 with 2-5-11. Yeah, Tina, you know, math teacher, so she loves that. 3-6-9 with 2-4-6 with 2-5-11. We'll probably do some Indiana in hour three as well. They got a nice late pick four. And Keeneland back today as well. You've got the two-year-olds, next set of two-year-olds that are hitting the track. Fourth race. 236. There's one today and there's one tomorrow. First crop and first starter type scenarios with a few of them, actually. There's, I saw, who did I see? I think Improbable has got his first starter. Yeah, Probable 10. And, you know, this is actually an interesting story, an interesting horse. In the fourth today, Jim Chapman bought this at Keeneland. Improbable out of Life at 10. And Life at 10 has struggled as a broodmare. She's got one, you know, multiple winner. She's got a couple that haven't won, and it really has not produced herself. Which is hard when you're a horse as good as she was. But this was a $37,000 yearling purchase. So clearly, with that pedigree, you would imagine there was, you know, the proverbial hole. But Jim Chapman's good with young horses, and this one's going to be a big price, and you know, it's kind of a funny chopping up of the name, Probale 10. Probale 10. At first, it's funny. I was ready to say Probable 10, but it's not. It's Probale 10. Probale 10. There's also, I think there's an Instagram, right? There's an Instagram. Yeah, Baytown Boo Boo. This is a Larry Best bred that Paul McEntee has got his hands on. And as we've told you before, McEntee, another one of those that is good with these types. 8-1 on Baytown Boo Boo. Hey, Boo Boo. The Dam, a proud citizen mare. She was a two-time winner. Baytown Boo Boo. So those are your two first crops today at Keeneland. And then tomorrow, I think there's only one, and it's 1,000 Words, who is 1-for-1 so far with his runners, right? He had that first out winner. Chapman again has got Belmontis. This was also a modest purchase. This actually was a $3,000 weanling filly, Belmontis. So 1,000 Words with his second starter. Other than that, they're all stallions that have had at least a crop. All right, so we'll keep an eye on that. There's actually tomorrow at Keeneland a notable maiden special for older horses, and 3 and ups go a 1/16 tomorrow. Sixth race. Keep an eye on this, because there's two horses, maybe three, but two in particular that are looking to break a maiden and move into something perhaps like the Peter Pan. And Secret Crush, the 6-5 favorite, the Candy Ride colt that just got beat by Dilger on March 16th. This is a My Racehorse, $300,000 Keeneland yearling, Fletcher and Arad Ortiz. And then Bill Mott and Lee Einsiedler counter with their West Coast colt that came into Saratoga, you know, with some real expectations last summer. Debuted in a 7/8 race. Wasn't successful. Actually, it turned out to be Deterministic's debut as well and win. But then came back and ran a very nice race going a mile at Gulfstream in the same Dilger Secret Crush race. So the two of them come back. Reynolds Channels 5-2 and Secret Crush 6-5. And a win for either will likely propel them toward the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga Racecourse. Just a quick aside. Maybe we'll talk. I don't know what Seth looked at today, but we'll see when we talk to him in hour three. A quick lineup in about 2 seconds. I'm going to reach out for Jessica Martini, and we'll get day one reaction from the OBS sale. And you had a Caro Caro who was making noise in the yearling market last year, and had the session topper, and for now the sale topper. You would think between now and Friday, there'll be a few million-dollar hips. But $775,000 for the LLP Performance Horses bred Caro Caro filly. She went late in the, fairly late in the day, actually midpoint in the day, I guess, a little bit past there, and fetched $775 from the three amigos. So that means Baffert and Donato Lani pulled this one out and wanted to bring it home for Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman. So that was your session topper. There was also a $600,000 Uncle Mo that Alpha Delta bred, and Justin Cassie bought for MV Magner. $600,000 for the Uncle Mo out of Jacaranda. And when it came to that, also that was also Philly. And then when it came to the boys, the biggest knockdown was the $650,000 global campaign, another slightly under the radar type. And Pedro Lance signed the ticket as an agent for KAS Stables. We'll find out more. This is a Florida bred that Eddie Woods prepared. Breeders Catherine Nielsen and Gem Racing. $650,000, the top colt. And boy, this horse, this horse has been through the ring, been through the ringer, but I'm a bump. This is the fourth time this colt has been sold under gavel. How about that? Yeah. Turned up, was in his mother's belly, actually. Was in Maiden Heaven's belly and was sold as an in utero in 22, then sold as a yearling a year later, at both at OBS, and then again in the fall, and has been ratcheting up. Sold with the dam for $30,000. Then sold as a short yearling for $83,000, sold as a fall yearling for $150,000, and now as a two-year-old sells for $650,000. How about that? A cool story. $550,000 for the Nyquist that we talked about yesterday with Seth Morris. So congratulations to Seth and to Nick Sallusto. They more than doubled their money, the Timonium Yearling for $205,000, and they net a nice profit. Spendthrift bought it with MKW, $550,000. So those are four of the tops. We'll get some more storylines in a minute from Jess, give you the rest of the thing that we're doing today. Jess, I mentioned, and Dick Powell, of course, after Jess. Hour two, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale and Sid Fernando. And I want Sid to maybe, you know, touch on the legacy of Marty Wygod. You know, we actually had talked a couple different times about resilience now. And it's sad. It's going to be bittersweet going forward with that horse for Marty and Pam's daughter, Emily, and for Rick Waldman. But we'll see what Sid's thoughts are. And we will go back to Minnesota. Yeah, we got to go back to Minnesota and catch up with, again, with Joe Scorto. There is some real animosities that are boiling over with this situation. And there's some Minnesota legislators that are being really exposed as being in the pocket of the tribes. In this era, it seems it's just shameless. So, this is ugly. And Running Aces, to their credit, their CEO Taro Ito, they're suing the casinos, the tribes, basically fighting back, saying, you know, they're running card games that aren't authorized by the state. So Joe's been and also Midwest Paddock Report. They've been a steady resource of, they're really keeping tabs on everything going on in this situation. But Running Aces and Canterbury hang in the balance of all this. So we'll check in with Joe Scorto. Seth, of course, in hour three, and I haven't confirmed her, but I will try to get Rachel McLaughlin in for the first Indiana glance of the season. They've got a couple of, they got an open company maiden race, then a state bred maiden group. State bred allowance and an open starter as the late pick four. And, you know, big full field, so we'll get I didn't look, actually. I haven't checked yesterday's how yesterday went. But, of course, you also had opening day at FanDuel yesterday, East St. Louis, and you Collinsville. And Lone Star opens this week, right? Lone Star opens. Sam Houston's thoroughbred meet ended. We'll get Nick. We'll talk to Nick. Get a kind of a recap there. We'll probably get Brandon Lee in here as well. And, you know, we got to help them any way we can in Texas. And, yeah, there it is. Let me get Jess in here, all right? And we'll, I think, did they... I think it went off. Yeah, it went off a couple minutes ago, the sixth at Happy Valley. So we'll start to look toward that, too. Bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Dick Powell. help me stay on track here. All right, there we go. We'll go get Jess, and it's funny because, and I'll ask her, because it seemed to me, and I was watching the sale when I got off the air, and it started right as we were done at noon, and it seemed like it took a while to get everybody in the gallery and start to actually sell some horses. Jess, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm sorry I can't be there. I certainly had enough people ask me if I was coming.
But, you're missing some beautiful weather.
Well, just one of the great reasons to be in Ocala. We'll get into some of the storylines, but am I wrong in thinking that it really was a slow starting session yesterday?
Yeah, I think we say that about all the sales, don't we? But yeah, this one seemed particularly slow at the start. It was funny because when we pulled into the parking lot, there was not a single spot open. So you think it's going to get off to a fast start, but it was definitely a slow starting sale. And I was almost surprised to see by the end of the day that the figures were pretty much in line with last year's opening session. So
exactly.
It definitely made up for it in the later stages.
It might as well go straight to the, let me pull the charts. There we go. Might as well go to the storylines, and no seven figure sellers yet. But it certainly was notable how a couple of first croppers, both on the Philly side and on the boy side, led the balance sheet. You had the $775,000 Caro-Caro that Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman brought home. And I'm anxious to know more about Pedro Lance and KAS, who brought home the Global Campaign Colt for $650.
Well, Pedro was really active at last year's the Keeneland Horses of Racing Age sale, buying horses for Saudi Arabia. So he's continued to do that since then. And this one, he said, could go to Saudi Arabia, but they're also thinking of expanding their operation, and this one could stay in the U.S.
Well, that's a development, right? Because the KAS is the acronym for... I don't know if it's an Abdullah or is it a
King Abdullah and Sons, I believe.
There you go. Thank you. King Abdullah and Sons. And
if it's not right, it sounds good. So
no, it's something like that. And that would be a development if they were going to establish a beachhead in North America. That would be good news.
Yeah, we're always looking for new buyers to come in, and it certainly, as I said, Pedro was big last year at the Horses of Racing Age sale, so maybe they're going to expand and buy more horses this year.
We seem to have started on the boys' side. We can do this as a dual track conversation, because both Global Campaign and Caro-Caro both did feel like they had strong yearling buzz, and here they are at an important juncture in the sales season, getting session toppers.
Sure, yeah, and that Caro-Caro filly obviously was no secret. She worked last week and was a 20-3. So, people 20-2 actually. So, yeah, everyone was on her, and just had wonderful things to say about her. Everybody thought she was beautiful.
I made a point of that Global Campaign Certainly an experienced horse when it comes to the ring, having sold as a short yearling and as a fall yearling, and even got the first taste of sales action while in utero.
Yeah, it's fun to watch that progression sometimes and see who's making the money. Sometimes it goes the right way. Everybody makes money. Sometimes somebody sells short and ends up selling for a lot. There's actually a Tis the Law colt, filly, that's selling today. There's a lot of buzz about her, and she sold for $170,000 as a yearling and expected to make a lot more than that today.
Well, and this one, I mean, there was a real amazing progression here, because the dam sold with this one, with the Global Campaign carrying, for $30,000. Then the baby sold as a short yearling for $83,000, and then sold as a fall yearling for $150,000, and now for $650,000.
It's an easy game. We should get into this, Steve.
No thanks. I have trouble. I had trouble getting bids on a couple of babies last fall. Let's hit a couple of the other storylines. You had, as it happens, I had Seth Morris on yesterday in advance of him offering, he and Nick Sallusto offering the Nyquist colt that fetched $550,000.
Right. That horse actually topped the yearling sale in Maryland last year. It was a $205,000 purchase last year. So they were very happy after that horse sold yesterday. I thought, yeah, I was, I'm here with Stephanie Grimm, who's covering her for sale for TDN. So we were speaking this morning about the Uncle Mo success from yesterday. Caracaro is obviously by Uncle Mo. He had a horse sale for $600,000, and then Nyquist had two nice sales, a $550,000 and a $460,000. So all Uncle Mo well represented in the top there.
Well, and you mentioned the Uncle Mo for $600,000, Justin Cassie for MV Magner, and this one bred by Alpha Delta was a $380,000 fall yearling, and now a $600,000 two-year-old, and you know, so a lot of familiar names on the, you know, the buying line. Bregman, here's the Bregman family racing. They spent $460,000 on a Boldoro filly. It was a good day for fillies. Woodford, $390,000 for the Omaha Beach, out of Humor Me Dixie. Quality Road filly for $370,000 to Peter Bradley. Nice variety of buyers and of successes here.
Yeah, and the Bregmans, I think, also bought a filly by Improbable earlier in the day before that. I wonder if all the fillies doing well has something to do with all the buyers buying the top-level yearlings, the colts, the colt stallion-making partnerships from last fall, if that pushes the pinhookers out of that colt market a little bit, and that's why we have these fillies doing well at the two-year-old sales.
Absolute. Makes sense. Back to the boys' side. And actually, I am going to mention, here's a win-win-win that Ocala Stud bred and offered, $310,000. So off the heels of the $1.8 million pop in March. And that a storyline.
What was interesting about that one, they had bred the mare as well and sold her as a two-year-old, I think, in 2016, and then claimed her back for $10,000 in 2019, and this is her first foal to sell.
Nice. I could shift over a little bit to the buyers, and I'll tell you what, the greens... one welcome visit is Len and John Green at any sale. They're avid shoppers.
And they waited till the very last horse through the ring yesterday. That 302 that they bought the knot this time was the last horse through the ring yesterday.
$380,000. Out of the nice Mama Kimbo. Aaron and Marie Jones bred, and Nick Demerick consigned, $380,000. And this one actually had RNA'd a couple of times as a yearling. Interesting. And actually had once as a weanling and once as a yearling. So they always thought highly and wanted to get the right number for this one. So I guess 380,
yeah.
Right? I guess 380 was the right number. Who else did you notice? You know, I'm looking at the top hips, and there, I really don't see Pedro, Spendthrift, Jimmy DeVito, Taproot, the Reeves. They bought a Vekoma, Colt, Speedway. Actually, Speedway it was on both sheets.
Yeah, interesting about that, the collected that Speedway bought for $310. They actually bred that horse and sold it as a weanling. It sold again as a yearling, and now they've bought it back as a two-year-old. I thought that was kind of interesting. I didn't talk to Marette Farrell about it, but I thought it was interesting.
It absolutely is, and in fact, I mean, by all rights, they kind of gave him away as a yearling, $42,000.
Yeah.
Is that, let me see something, that's hip, that was early in the sale too.
I think it's 63.
63 is the hip, and I'm just curious about the family connections. The second dam got Finley's Lucky Charm, who was okay. It was quite nice. That was the good filly and mare sprinter. Won the Madison. There you go. Was that Brett Calhoun?
Oh, your memory's better than mine.
Now, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Actually, but now we're going to find out because I'm
okay.
Because I get
now you're interested.
Well, because I think it's somebody. It's somebody. You know, less than. It is, but look at me, like a steel trap. That's unbelievable. Brett Calhoun, bam. You know,
if you can't impress yourself, who can you
exactly.
impress?
Exactly. It's like a pork chop in front of a bloodhound. Unbelievable. So proud of myself, Jess. It's unbelievable.
Well done, Steve. Well done.
Thank you. This is also the family of Gather the Clan, Pure Clan and Company, Bob Holtis. Nice. What are we looking at today? Give us a look ahead to today's action.
Well, I mentioned the Tis the Law filly. Everyone says she looks like a colt, so we're looking forward. I haven't seen her in the flesh, but I'm looking forward to seeing her. I think later in the week, Top Line Sales has a Bolt Oro who's supposed to be very nice. I think there's a few Eddie Woods had a McKenzie who worked real well, so he's expected to do well as well.
Is there, first chance that we've spoken since March, as you walked the barns and you watched horses being evaluated, did you see anybody that, you know, from a stallion standpoint that was maturing on interesting timing, or, you know, horses that developed from what you've been seeing?
You know, I've always been impressed by the McKenzies, and they continue to impress me, so I think he's one to watch.
And then, of course, you know, we have the slight benefit, I suppose, of what, 10 days worth of two-year-old racing at Keeneland. I don't know how much influence, there's been a couple of first crop winners, the Thousand Words that won early. And who was the other? There was another, actually, Baffert-trained stallion that, that was an Improbable that he get? Or was it McKenzie? There was one of those.
I don't know. Your mind's better than mine this morning. I haven't had my breakfast yet, so.
By the way, you mentioned Stephanie Grimm, and she's a new. In fact, I think her name came up yesterday in the Turf Writers meeting, as it happens.
Probably, yeah. Now she's worked for us for 2 years now, and she came. She's from Virginia, and actually did the Keeneland January sale with me as well. So she's just getting started. I made her walk out to barn 15 yesterday, and she's still speaking to me. So, oh, I'm sorry. She says she's corrected me. It's barn 16. I made her walk out to barn 16. I told her, just keep walking until you get to no more barns. That's it.
Are you?
So she's a gamer.
Are you saying that C-Boss has had enough of your act?
she might have had enough. I asked her if she wanted to come, and she said, no, thank you.
Jess, I appreciate it. We will probably check in again later in the week. Day two, and they're back to the regular schedule today, right? They're not. They didn't.
Yes, we're starting at 10:30 today.
Very good. All right. I appreciate
Great.
It.
Thanks, Steve.
Jessica Martini, everybody. And it's never too early for a martini when it's Jessica Martini. And the coverage in the TDN, which is outstanding. So I'll reach for Dick Powell. We're in good shape. We'll get Dick here momentarily. Let me mention, what did I... that will save, obviously, for... excuse me. The... actually, just now, Mid-Atlantic, the Timonium sale came up, and I got the email yesterday that, and looked actually at the catalog for Timonium, which, of course, comes right on the heels of Preakness, the Bree Show, Preakness Week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then the sale right after Preakness, Monday and Tuesday. And everybody... across the street at Michael's for crab cakes. And Jess mentioned the Horses of Racing Age sale. That made me think of, as well, I looked at that catalog and looked at the PPs. There's some interesting horses that are going to change hands and some horses, you know, that have real resumes. There's a couple of Pletcher, a couple of Chad Brown, and a couple of McPeaks that are going to change hands. Smile Happy, Tis the Bomb. Noted. Dynamic One is going to go through the ring. That's next Friday, week from Friday, 26th, the Horse of Racing Age sale. And those will become awfully popular because, you know, you get a horse that's in mid-career. Let me get to Dick. I'll weave in some of the other news, as we talk. All right. And one thing I have not done, and it's not necessarily, I do a lot of international conversation with Dick Powell, but partly because we didn't get a chance to talk to Nick Locke in advance of entry of the Grand National, but the Grand National ended up chalky with the there's Dick Powell. Dick, good morning.
Steve, good morning.
I not to digress immediately, but I must admit, Tina and I were having dinner. We went up to Glens Falls yesterday and went to Talk of the Town, which is our favorite. And I said, we got to go to Talk of the Town and to Martha's because otherwise I won't be able to go till June. So we made that trip. And while we were there, they had Major League Baseball TV on. And word came that Carl Erskine had died. And I'll be honest, I did not realize Erskine was still alive. And then minutes later that Whitey Herzog had died. But the Erskine news, I thought of you immediately. It's kind of funny. I thought, Dick, it's something I can bring up with Dick because the first call normally would have been to my father to talk about Erskine passing. But the boys of summer and... read more about Erskine than I ever had before yesterday.
Yes. Great story. And the New York Post had a story about him and his son born with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
They didn't institutionalize him. They raised him at home with the three other kids. And the boy lived to be in his 60s. He worked at Applebee's for 20 years. And just, you know, just reading about Carl Erskine, you just like, he's a guy you wanted to get to know. You know, forget about Major League Baseball. He just sounded like a super person. No one had words to say about him. And they talked about the 53 World Series when The Dodgers did get beat, but he pitched those. Struck out 14 Yankees. Struck out Mickey Mantle four times, and I think it was game three. So he had a great career, and then it just sounds like a super person.
One of the things that was distinguishing, and of course, you know, coming on the heels here of Jackie Robinson Day, you know, baseball wide, Erskine was a fast friend immediately with Robinson, and it turns out in part because of having grown up in a mixed race neighborhood in Anderson, Indiana. Which I thought was interesting. And he went back to Anderson and sold insurance and had, you know, had a couple different businesses and coached and so forth. And I tell you, the thing in the Washington Post obit that was interesting, he, as a rookie, apparently hurt himself pretty badly early in the season and didn't tell anybody. And it bothered him the rest of his career. It's one of the reasons his career, you know, he retired, I think, at 32 or 33.
Pretty young. I think part of it was when they moved to the West Coast, he was away from home and didn't seem to buy into West Coast living and travel and everything else. But, yeah, it was great reading about him. It really was.
You know, and you said something.
And Whitey Herzog, as a Met fan, he was our nemesis, and Whitey was brash and confident, but man, he knew baseball. Jesus.
And yeah, it's funny because I was in Kansas City in '85, and that Royals team, which was a lot of fun, and I had a 40 game package that I split. There was a preacher that had a church in on the east side, and I got very friendly with him because sometimes, you know, he would call me to give his game away, and I'd call him and say I can't be there this Saturday or whatever, so we would swap tickets and go to Arthur Bryant's for lunch and meet there. It's just tremendous. But yeah, Whitey Herzog too. And but Erskine, I mean, my father, kind of had a wave of nostalgia. My father was a huge Dodger fan. And in fact, I took Tina and Spencer to the Ebbets Field Apartments recently over the winter. We had breakfast at Tom's Diner, and I said, you know what, I want to bring you over to show you where Ebbets Field was. And they, you know, they kind of looked at me like I had two heads, but that's all right.
not the first time.
No, that's true. Thanks, Dick. Let's see here. We got about 7-8 minutes. Why don't you give everybody the pick three play?
Oh man, the Tanos here is acting up really bad. He unseated Karis Keaton, but Karis held on to the reins. Now Karis is back on, and the horse is going like the nine and change, warming up. So we'll see about him. First race, we're going 1,200 meters. There's three logical favorites. I went with two of them. Number three, Brave Star, Palio Ewitson. Number six is, I think, 2-1 favorite, Beauty Infinity, John Size and Zach Purton. And then, looking for a price, I threw in the 9, Happy Day for Jamie Richards. Had a couple wins moving up in class. Last time out, when he moved up to this class three, didn't run bad. And I think from a good post and pretty lightly weighted, I think we have a shot. So in this race, it'll be 3, 6, and 9. Race 8, second leg of the pick 3, 2, 4, 6. Comet Splendido, Ellis Wong has had 2 wins on the night already with 10-pound allowance. Number 4, Golden Darcy for Hugh Bowman. And number 6, same combination, Strongest Boy, David Hayes with Zach Purton, coming in off 2 very strong races against this class level. And then the last race of the night, number 2, Quantum Patch. Hugh Bowman breaks from post position 2. Number 5, Show Respect, Brent Abdullah. has become one of the real hot writers over there. And part of it was his brilliant ride on California Spangled, both in Hong Kong, and then Brent rode him to victory in Dubai. So Brent gets back aboard for this one for Mark Noonan. And then we're going to throw in lightweight number 11, Zoom Boom. Harry Bentley rides for Doug White. A couple of statistics, Steve. Happy Valley, obviously a tight course. So the 1,200 meters at this configuration, when the rail is out to the seed position, post 10, no wins from 36 starters. Post 11, 1 for 34. Post 12, 2 for 27. Going two turns to 1650. Post 10, 1 for 23. Post 11, 0 for 22. Post 12, 0 for 21. So if you're on those far outside posts, now, I'm not saying it's impossible, but you got to get a price. You can't play a kind of a favorite horse, you know, top three pick from those kind of posts at Happy Valley, which the turns are tight and they're just really hard to overcome. So that's all in your form guide that you can download at HKJC every race day.
Always more information than you can even comprehend or decipher. Until you get familiar with it, it can be overwhelming. But it's all, you know, it's one of the real hallmarks of what they do. The numbers. Let's go back. We're about what? We're 2 minutes. We're about 2 minutes, and just a 10-horse field. But I'll tell you, you know, for a 10-horse field, they're not exactly overwhelming us with. I mean, 9-5 on Beauty Infinity, right? That's the.
It's not
overwhelming, right? And then no. Then you go to 4-1 for Brave Star with Lyle Hewitson, 6-1 Goko Win, the 5, and two other single digits, 7-1 on Kyrus Dragon, that 10 you mentioned, and 8-1 on Happy Fat Cat, Matthew Poon. We love Matt Poon.
The Poon Train.
That's it. So, all right.
Now, quick story about the pick three.
Yeah.
Saturday night, Sunday morning, I shot 10. Last three races. Now, every race, the last three races, they all have 14 horse fields. So money's going to get spread out. Prices are going to be pretty high. Race nine. Race nine was one paid 18.20. Race 10 paid 17.80. Race 11 paid 17.60. So they're all 8, 9 to 1. They're makeable. One was a fourth choice. One was a fifth choice. One was a third choice. The pick three comes back $1,162. Okay, that's a pretty nice price. But considering all the combinations, not that much more than the parlay. Here's where it gets interesting. The second horse in the last leg, because remember, we pay the second horse in any horizontal bet, doubles and trebles. So the second horse goes off 70-1. He pays $1,902 as the consolation. So the consolation paid more than the horse who won. The horse who ran second paid more than the horse who won because the odds were that disparate. So I did some research, finally found what I was looking for. The way they compute it is you got the pool, subtract takeout, and then of the net, 85% goes to the winner, 15% goes to the runner-up, thus the gigantic consolation Saturday night.
Wow. Huh. And clearly only a handful of winners. We're loading up and favored Beauty Infinity, 8-5, the 6, and then the 3 and 9 are who we're looking for. Brave Star is 7-2, the 3, and Happy Day is our price. Let's get Happy Day home at 22-1, Dick.
Yeah, That'd be nice.
Right. Just about set, and we'll bring up the audio. This is the Bowen handicap. Maybe the Ed Bowen handicap for you. For you Patriarch and Matriarch fans and Hall of Fame. There we go. It's got two more to load. And then we'll do a quick recap and look ahead to the weekend and get some post Derby prep thoughts. Here we go, just about set.
Four now, not usual star. Happy Fat Cat drawn one. They're racing. He made a lunge at the gate, Happy Fat Cat, and he missed it by about 10. Just hang on to your ticket for him because he did go to make a lunge at the gate. Not usual star has come out thinking, is it the Happy Valley Rodeo? It's all happening in the first 200 metres. Superb Capitalist. Well, he jumped like the Superb Capitalist of old. He leads by two lengths over Beauty Infinity. Next to the inside, Brave Star from GoCo Win, Happy Day. And then came Eason, Kyra's Dragon, and Capital Delight is next. A break of about seven lengths to Happy Fat Cat. And where's Not Usual Star? He's just up against the outside rail, cantering around. Superb Capitalist allowed stride away. He's out by four lengths over Beauty Infinity. Brave Star pushed along on the inside. Two lengths to Happy Day. Then GoCo Win, Kyra's Dragon, followed by Eason and Capital Delight. Winner looks like it will come from either Superb Capitalist or Beauty Infinity. Brave Star third, and there's a big gap off to the rest. Superb Capitalist with 200 metres to go is still three in front of Beauty Infinity. Brave Star, Kyra's Dragon next. They are not eating into this lead at all, and Superb Capitalist is just going to run them off their legs. Superb Capitalist from a very, very close go. Beauty Infinity or Kyra's Dragon. Then came...
Wow. This was a clever ride. Angus Chung just... took control, Dick, and never looked back.
He has been tremendous. Now, he started out real well. He still has his 5-pound apprentice allowance. Then when Hugh Bowman got hurt, I thought he would really move right up. And he kind of floundered. But the last probably 2 months, every night he has a winner. So 8-9 races, he's having a winner. Two wins tonight. And this is for his main man, Tony Cruz. So that's their 13th win together at the meet. He just broke the race open early. There was some craziness going on in the back of the pack. I don't know if any of them were going to be speed horses or not, but Superb Capitalist, just dominant. You don't see many sprint races won that easily on the front end.
No. And made the note. Here's the replay, and boy, what a eventful! It was a fairly eventful start to the race because you had, who was that lunged at the Happy Fat Cat?
Happy Fat Cat, yeah. And then the seven went to the outer rail.
Yeah, and he just didn't run that. Not usual yeah. Star, who was 20-1, but Happy Fat Cat was 9-1 with Matt Poon, and. You know, sometimes you beat the gate, and sometimes the gate beats you.
Yeah. And figured to show speed. So when Happy Fat yeah. Cat breaks the way he did, here's Angus Chung all alone. And I give Chung credit. He pushed on. He didn't act like, oh, I got a lead. I think I'll conserve energy. He just opened up distance.
Huh. All right. Well, all right. Going to have to regroup. 2-4-6 with 2-5-11 for the late double. All right, let's do that.
Hey, I have a quick Ed Bowen story.
Yeah.
when I got into racing, I would go down to Belmont and go upstairs to the press box, and Sammy Renick was there. And Sammy thought I was Ed Bowen. Now, Sammy was pretty short, pretty tall, maybe down there looking up, bald guy with glasses. Maybe we all look alike. So he would, and Sammy was still writing. He'd write a piece for the Blood Horse every now and then and stuff. But he was always seemingly working on something. So he would come up to me and start talking about what he's working on. And I never had the heart to tell him. So then I would see Ed Bowen and I'd say, Mr. Bowen, Sammy wants you to know and I would deliver the message to Ed Bowen. But Sammy Renick thought I was Ed Bowen, which is a very nice compliment, but I'm not Ed Bowen. I knew Ed Bowen, and you're not Ed Bowen.
Exactly. Exactly. That's funny. I like it. Dick, how about the weekend coming up? Actually, we got a couple of next week, too. We got one of the big weekends to look forward to.
The big piece of news is this weekend we're running early Saturday morning, late Friday night at Sha Tin. So no Sunday racing. We're going to have Saturday racing. A mixed meet, all weather and turf. No big stake races. But the following weekend, and they just came out with the 50-page form guide for Champions Day. Three Group 1 stake races, horses from all over the world, the Japanese sending a strong contingent, the locals, Golden 60, will be back for only his second start of the year, but he was so good back in December. And the Sprinters, the Massive Sovereign, Galaxy Patch, moving up against, you know, 5 and 6-year-olds, California Spangled, is back in the sprint. Unfortunately, Lucky Swain has won his last start. After suffering a couple of losses, he came back and won his last start, and now he's injured. He's out for years, so he won't be contesting the races. But the Japanese are sending over a strong group. The locals are very strong in all three races, 6 furlongs, a mile, and 10 furlongs. Romantic Warrior, Voyage Bubble, they're all in these races. So all three races, just going to have not a layup. You know, you're going to have great horses, but you're going to have 3-4 great horses, plus others with the chance. So that'll come up April 28th, a week from this Sunday morning. And then this week on Saturday morning, we're back at Sha Tin for, I think it's a 10 race card.
Well, and you mentioned the form guide. Click on the link. We've got it up at our website. The orange, you'll see the orange logo and link, and everything you could possibly want is there. You got a fabulous media guide, and you got the anticipated fields that are laid out already, and who they expect to compete. All right. And we'll next week we'll obviously dig in.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we get nice weather. Firm track last Saturday night, the track was good to firm. Today at Happy Valley seems a little bit slow, although that last race didn't look good. But they've been running back to par, sometimes faster than par. Most of the winter, they've been above standard. They're running slower than standard, but starting to show signs with, you know, warmer weather. Turf tightens up a little bit, doesn't get as much moisture. So should have perfect conditions for the Champions Day, the FWD Champions on April 28th.
We'll talk more next week about it. Dick, just a couple of minutes before we go. And we're close on Derby and Oaks. We've got working fields. There's going to be a couple of seemingly at least the one with deterministic unlikely to compete, which gets Grand Mo the first in, but Oaksfield as well, pretty firmed up. Any thoughts here post as we get closer?
Well, I'm just thrilled that they're going to draw the races the Saturday before. So I get all that extra time to have post positions and everything in place, and not going to know track condition, but everything else would be in line. So that's for me, that's great. And it also has kind of an implication, because Todd said he was going back to Palm Beach Downs with Fierceness, and he would stay down there, but you have to be on track 11 o'clock that morning when they draw the races. So he may or may not have his final work at Churchill, depending on weather forecast and things like that. I'd like to come in as probably late as possible, but he can't really do that this year with the new schedule. So that'll be interesting to see who's on the grounds and who's going to, you know, take advantage of that work, you know, that last work, that Friday and Saturday. I don't make a big deal over that last work. I make a big deal over the second to last work.
Yeah.
If you have work to do, that's when you do the work. The maintenance work is usually the last work. The horse can look great, no doubt, but they're not getting much out of it. So following the workouts this time of year is when you really got to be up on who's doing what. And thankfully, a whole bunch of them are televised. So you have access to seeing them. I just like watching. Remember last year how negative I was on Forte? I was just brutal on his training. I thought he was awful. And apparently he was, because he didn't get by the vet. Right.
Exactly.
So we'll see. We'll see this year. But that's going to be fun. I have everything in front of you beforehand and just monitor the weather and track conditions during the week. And the reality is that the track they train over is not necessarily the track they're going to race over. The track they're going to race over is going to be groomed differently, going to be faster. You don't really want a super fast track this time of year when you're not racing and they're just galloping and stuff. So it all comes together, and 20 horses will get in the starting gate.
Unless we end up like last year where there was mayhem in the 48 hours, 72 hours, and we ended up, we ended up 18, I think, ended up leaving the gate, right?
But if you're number 21, just think Rich Stripe. If you're sitting on the AE list,
exactly.
Just stay ready. Keep your schedule as if you were gonna run, because I mean, we've seen Uncle Mo scratch the day before. We've seen some serious scratches heading into the Derby. So.
No doubt. And that's actually, that historically even goes back. I talk all the time about General Duke, the most interesting and ultimately controversial Derby result when stablemate Iron Liege managed to save one for Calumet, who wasn't anticipated. And then, of course, you have Shoemaker, misjudging the finish line. And it's not just the greatest crop in racing history, but one of the most amazing stories. All kinds of intrigue. It's one of my favorite memories on the show is asking Nehru about it on air. I wish we still know those. That was before the digital age, and we used to have to record things on CDs. And I'd love to have those Nehru conversations. Unbelievable.
Yep.
Kind of lost to posterity. Well, Dick, I appreciate it. I will talk to you next week from Louisville.
Sounds good.
Dick Powell, everybody, HKJC Racing, and we'll try to regroup and see if we can't come away with a double here, maybe 2-4-6 with 2-5-11. And just, that just shows you the pace is everything. You have a pace factor below the break, because we're trying to beat the gate, and the gate hadn't sprung. So boom, into the right into the gate you go. The next thing, he was back on his heels and then broke behind the field, and the winner marches around. All right, let's get to Sid. He's got a busy morning. He just said to me, I got to be off by 10:30. So let's get Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, into gear, and joined by Sid this morning. Sid,
good morning.
How you doing?
Good.
We got to give everybody an update on the pooch, because you got some good news. Not going to have to kind of manage her physical issue.
No surgery.
It's
real similar to like horses that have, young horses that have bad conformation, and sometimes corrective surgery is involved. But fortunately, she's obviously not going to be doing agility or anything like that. And she can be managed. So, you know, that's great news.
Nice. I wanted you to update everybody who...
She has to lose a little more weight because they carry 60% of their weight on their front legs.
Huh.
Yeah.
She's got that big
chest. She's perfect weight if she were fine. But with this condition, to reduce some of the stress on the left front leg, all we have to do is also, you know, cut her back a little, drop her about 5 pounds.
All right, we're gonna we will monitor her. We'll monitor her. She, maybe do some weigh-ins
that's right.
And record them on. For everybody to take in. No, everybody was concerned.
It was a really touching response by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking. And how are you?
We're good. Good. Getting ready. I got start the leave for Friday for Kentucky, and focus in. And of course, next week you've also got the Hall of Fame announcement that'll come as well next week. Looking toward that.
It should be a great trip for you. So how long will you be in Kentucky?
Two weeks plus. Then I'll stay, you know, probably till Tuesday after again. And then we'll go to Nashville for the Iroquois. And then from Nashville to Baltimore.
Wow. What a schedule. That's
another, this is just home, for 9 days after 5 weeks and back out.
Oh my God.
That's all right. Back out for four. This is the heavy travels in the front half of the year. We'll have some summer forays, including Haskell and Million at Colonial, and we're actually going to the HBPA convention at Prairie Meadows. It'll be first trip to Prairie Meadows. We're going to the first King's Plate. Going to go to Plate in August. Yeah, never been. Then at Labor Day, we'll do the Kentucky swing for Kentucky Downs and for Keeneland, Keeneland Book One, and Churchill Fall Opening. So it's
Steve Bick, the hardest working journalist.
Well, the hardest traveling anyway, I guess. That's not fair because I go places and I see the FanDuel staff all over the place. Most notably, Caitlin Bradar. She's a gallivanting trooper. She's everywhere. And I see Joaquin Jaime. He seems to be on the road tremendously. I see Zoe Cadman, and I see her at the sales as well. I see her at OBS in addition to, you know, the other coverages that she does. And
yeah,
you know, so nah,
there you go.
Yeah. Got to ask you, and I should have given you the heads up, I suppose, but it won't take you far afield. This passing of Marty Wygod we're losing a few too many, you know, real stalwarts. Until people sit down and look at that list of successes that he and his wife Pam what they've authored, he's got a real impact, Marty Wygod.
He really does. And funny thing is, you and I were just talking about him and his daughter and Rick Wallman just last week with Reliance. And it is something. I mean, you know, he was originally from Brooklyn. Of course, you know, he made a huge name for himself in the business world, WebMD. And other concerns. Well, what's really interesting is, he had his farm in California, River's Edge, where he established a really successful breeding program too. Pirates Bounty, for example, was there. And he was nationally very prominent, obviously. We saw in Reliance's pedigree, you know, his affiliation with Stormcat, the successes he had with Stormcat, and that, of course, that's where he developed his relationship with Rick Wallman. And he had a really good mix of the California and the Kentucky stuff. He was involved in a lot of horses that, you know, stallions wise. In fact, as a matter of fact, Candy Ride, who started off at John Secora's Hillendale, he ended up getting moved to Lane's End, really, because Marty Wygod had a ton of control of the shares of the horse. So, you know, just an example of his influence in a lot of ways. He had a very strong relationship with Lane's End, which is, of course, where Candy Ride went to. And, you know, what are you gonna say? You know, a lot of these guys are, you know, they aged, and it's not like they were dying at 50 or 60. He had a full life, and you know, every year we see a lot of stalwarts, as you pointed out, especially people that were involved in owning and breeding. That's really a story in itself. You know, so many home breeders have aged out and died, and really there haven't been people coming in to replace them. That's been for decades now, and that's shaped the evolution of the game so much.
You know, it's interesting to me too that where certain industrialists and you know, prominent contributors or participants in racing, when they're, you know, when the tributes come out and the obituaries, and Wygod is in the Washington Post, the AP obit actually makes it very clear. I mean, they equate his interest in the game with his business acumen and success.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, the industrialist side of things is pretty well documented, and then there's some references, you know, to being
right.
involved. He's really thought of and being acknowledged as being as successful with his involvement in the game as his, you know, healthcare. And I did not know about the WebMD side of things. I didn't realize that he had gone off to that after he sold the principal business.
Right. Yeah, no, he was, really quite a decorated individual. He was, should also mention, of course, he was also a member of the Jockey Club.
Well, and you know, the thing that was a bit of a revelation was, you know, his origins and having gone to high school with Bobby Frankel, which I got a kick out of.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And the fact that the Fletcher Jones, you know, kind of I guess the industry owes a debt of gratitude to Fletcher Jones for luring Marty Wygod into the game by giving him a couple of horses.
Yeah. And if you Google my name with Fletcher Jones, I did a big piece on Fletcher Jones in the TDN some years back. And that gives you if you read through it, you'll also see how the land that they all built farms on around that area, you know, was really Fletcher Jones was a pioneer in that, and River's Edge and Mr. Marty Wygod, they kind of followed that path that Fletcher Jones had kind of beaten through to create that landed area.
Well, I'm just going back to my original, there we go, back to the Post. They also, it's also clearly acknowledged about the circumstances around resilience and you know the fact that one of his is going to be involved in the Derby when he had never had one get to the Derby, Marty Weigott. It's going to be a notable story. I wanted to get your thoughts. I knew you'd have some feel for what and for those that haven't seen the in addition to what you guys what you and Francis have done, Nicole Russo also she had two different it's a sort of a hybrid. It's really the same piece, but I think she was already working on a resilience story with Weigott, and then the passing happened. So it's there's two stories, but that kind of intersect. So
excellent.
Yeah, Nicole's treatment is quite good as well. I'm still waiting to get John Sheriffs. I wanted John to talk about there's one quote that he cited where he calls himself something that outsiders with knowledge of how certain owners' reputations. He called himself difficult, so I don't feel as badly about saying he was known as a difficult owner, because he said himself he was a difficult owner.
There you go.
I got a big kick out of that, because he was well known as being a difficult owner. there's some owners, right, that said that you hear from once or twice a year, and trainers, they might talk to an owner a couple of times a month, or after a race. And then there's owners that you have to, manage carefully.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Right.
Wealthy billionaire, very meticulous in everything he did. I'm sure, as he admitted, he wanted stuff done a certain way.
Exactly right. And then others, others are more laissez-faire, and they enjoy, having something to look forward to in terms of starts and whatnot. So. They're all,
The old laissez-faire owners, if you characterize it generally, they were part of that group of owner breeders from a kind of a different era. They're trainers, really. They didn't get involved in the minute details and where to race and what we're going to do. They were laissez-faire. And as they've gone out of the business, your newer owners who come from business backgrounds that dictate active involvement and policy making and so forth, they brought that kind of mentality to the sport.
It occurs to me to ask you as a as a breeding consultant.
Yeah.
That's a much slower moving process, essentially, when it comes to on track. And if you're talking about owners that buy horses at auction, let's say, whether it's yearlings or 2 year olds in training, they get a read pretty quickly as to what kind of success they're having. When it comes to the breeding side, though, Sid, it's a much slower process, and I'm just curious, what your experience is over the over the breadth of your career in terms of the. I think I've asked you this in a different in a different guise about, you know, how quickly you make determinations in, you know, in terms of the success of the direction of your broodmare band, essentially.
Well, you know, it goes hand in hand with the fact that if you have a broodmare band and you're breeding to race, those types of owners, those types of home breeders have really kind of diminished. They've vanished almost from the landscape. You know, it's a different mentality when you're breeding to race. You know, one of the things that you do, obviously, put yourself in the position, you're as a breeder as well. When you're breeding a program, when you're breeding to race, you tend to give your own horses more time. That's what you have. You have your crop of horses. You know, the horses tend to not be rushed along because you only have a certain amount of them, and you have to stick with what you have. And so you know, the mentality before was that mentality. So people generally gave horses more time to develop and mature and everything. There wasn't a big rush to get them to the Derby. And, you know, that thing had the rush to get to the Derby is a relatively new phenomenon. Probably, you know, evolved over the last 40 odd years, but the people that come in, they buy yearlings, you know, there's financial pressure and there's syndicates to put together their owners that need to have a quick return on investment. If you look at the types of owners that were involved in breeding to race from years ago, they were wealthy people. It was definitely more of a sporting gesture for them rather than a income generation enterprise. So, you know, there's so many different factors in that. You know, people would give a mare, getting back to your example, plenty of opportunities to try to get something going. Whereas a commercial breeder with a mare, if she's not really doing much or if she's not producing great looking foals, she's going to get culled. So everything gets, you know, the Darwinian process that we've talked about with young horses that go to stud, for example, they go to stud, they're bred to a ton of mares, and if they don't show much with their first crop of two-year-olds, and sometimes even quicker than that, they're out. So that itself is a, you know, that's a Darwinian thing. It's the strongest survive type of thing. And you have to hit quickly. Everything has been accelerated, to answer that particular question, in the commercial breeding environment. Whether it's mares or whether it's stallions, whether it's racing prospects. You know, take a guy like Chuck Fipke, who is an anomaly these days because he is one of the few home breeders. He doesn't buy yearlings to the race. He breeds everything. And, you know, look at his horse, Cheryl's Fight. He's 7 years old. He's still running this year.
Yeah.
His grade one winner, Seeking the Soul, ran till he was, you know, six. The same with his mare, Eclipse Award-winning mare, Forever Unbridled, you know, five, maybe six. You know, you give them more time, you can have a longer career with them, and you're not under the gun to do that. But of course, you know, you can't Mr. 50 is also like one of those, you know, wealthy owner breeders from the past. He's got the money to be able to do that, right? And he's got a passion for it when you're breeding. But if you're just going out and you're buying, you know, you got a budget and you're buying, you know, 15 yearlings every year for $10 million, groups of people that put money together, and there's pressure to get them to the races, win a grade one right away as quickly as possible, so that, you know, at least they can sell a horse for stud duty to recoup the investment. So that's you know, that's a change that's affected many different parts of the industry. Back in the day when you had these owner breeders at the top, believe it or not, you also had that same model coming all the way down to even smaller breeders that followed that same model. They would have a stallion, have their mares breed, race, and you know, do it at on a smaller scale. The entire picture has really changed. You have the big syndicates at the top of the market buying horses, and at the bottom you've had people that can no longer afford it, and so really a lot of the shift in racing is taking place at the bottom, which is getting eliminated, whether it's small racetracks and the small owner breeders that went with them, the small owners that went with them. So really the model of racing has become much more top heavy, and that top heaviness has kind of pervaded the entire game. It's what's surviving. I suppose it's its own Darwinian evolution, because they are expanding. Less people control more horses now than in the past. That's applicable to stallions too. Less stallions breed more mares, for example.
Well, and that it's amazing that you went to this, because I actually I took a screen capture yesterday off of I guess it was Substack. In fact, I'm sure it was. And Robert Reich had put out a chart, but he cited, and in fact, here it is. Airlines have merged from 12 major carriers in 1980 to 4 today. A handful of companies control the entire pharmaceutical industry. 4 giants control 80% of meat processing. The evidence of corporate concentration is everywhere. And in this case, he's talking about higher prices. Fewer competitors mean higher prices. You know, trying to explain, you know, some of the anomalies in pricing out there. But for our purposes, Sid, that you bring this up, you got these people, notably on Twitter, you know, wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth over the same scenario that is pervading society economically in every walk of life, and they're having trouble. They're having trouble understanding why in racing. Maybe because it's the same thing everywhere in every industry.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, we could argue the merits of its negativity, but we can't argue the fact that it's all pervasive through every part of life. It's not just specific to racing. And that's the point that people in this game have to understand when they're trying to look for problem solving, that this is not just something that's happened here. It's happening everywhere.
It's funny. I specifically screen capped that to send to you, and then I forgot to do it, and then you end up bringing the point up in the course of the conversation.
There you go.
Ripped from today's headlines, as always. Honestly, to your credit, and you know, because the conversations, you know, are free form. You know, you've reiterated and provided examples of how racing as a construct is a microcosm of society at large. And so
exactly.
Instead of this hair pulling and Sky is Falling insanity. How about everybody understand the mechanics of why we're where we are and how this, you know, how this is has happened, and the whys. I mean, it's not that difficult to, you know, to understand and to make those connections.
Unless you happen to live in an insular world with no comprehension of, you know, general trends. And that tends
that's
to
fair.
Be one of the problems of people within this game.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
I mean, you and I have talked about this in terms of baseball as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing, the shrinking of the minor leagues. The attention to the top of the draft. You know, there's so many parallels that you can take. If you just pick anything out of the blue and compare it to racing, you'll find similarities. I mean, yeah, like we said, it's a microcosm.
The got the, just a minute or two, Sid, before we go, and we'll talk to you from the next 2 weeks from Louisville, and obviously we'll drill down on Derby, but some interesting developments, including the potential for Godolphin to participate. I suppose just a quick glance at Encino. Here's another Nyquist out of the Bernardini mare, glittering jewel, and a horse that's won three straight synthetic
and
the to dirt.
Family of Speed Sense.
Yep. I mean, what do you think? I mean, last year they were hopeful to get in with First Mission, and then they reoriented toward Preakness, and then he still couldn't even compete. Do you think the lure, I'm going to guess, is going to be a little irresistible?
Yeah, and you know, when you think about organization like that, they've got a division here in Kentucky. They've got their European division. And, you know, I'm sure that there's competition among the divisions. Each division wants to have horses for the shape and all the classics and stuff. So, I'm sure that there would be some allure in that, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure. You get, how many North American campaigning three-year-olds, and you're this close. He's doing good.
They won a bunch of Eclipse Awards. They're feeling pretty good. Yeah.
Well, I'll be surprised. We'll be surprised if they don't, frankly, but we'll see. All right. I appreciate it. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, Work Thoroughbred Consultants. And, if you've got some late foals that have been delivered and you've had a mare or two retire, made a decision in the last several weeks, get with Sid and Roger and Francis, 510-490-1111. Let Sid work the magic. Maybe get you a late season deal on a stallion. That's out there.
Yeah, this is the season for that. Sure.
Right. It's like it's like shopping at Costco. As we call it in that industry, the treasure hunt. Let Sid treasure hunt a stallion cover for you. 510-490-1111.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot, Sid. Sid Fernando, folks, and Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. We're going to take a break, bottom of the hour, and when we come back, I got a bunch of things. We're going to get that Minnesota update, number one. We'll get that. I want to find out what the latest is. It looks ugly and nasty. The Samsons have been polite, but the gloves seem to have come off from Running Aces chairman Taro Ito. He's ready to go to the mattresses. Here's a quote. They're just hoping to operate without fear of being eliminated. That's a scary quote. So Joe Squirto will give us an update on what's going on in the halls of the Minnesota legislature, where it sure looks like a number of legislators are in the pocket of the tribes. I don't know how else to put it. So we'll see. Here, let me grab this. This is always a good time to slip in some other news. The CHRB is still dealing. I mean, the Justify Santa Anita Derby question just churns and churns. After deciding, that disqualification was warranted and disqualifying Justify because of the handling of the scopolamine positive, the CHRB said they would allow an appeal, but they aren't going to, they denied a stay, a request of a stay on the disqualification and the purse distribution. But the team can appeal. So this continues to just, it just goes on and on. Similarly, or not related, but kicking around in court is this potential for the injunction that Amr Zidane is seeking, and apparently we'll know in about 48 hours what's going on there. All right, so there's that. I saw that even The Score passed away, the Unbridled Song Son, that had some success as a stallion, a solid stallion. Yeah, nice to hear from Ro Para, Millennium. Said he and his wife were saddened by even The Score's passing. Let's take a break. We'll do some Minnesota next. Stay with us.
Horsemen, nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile. In the $150,000 Penn Oaks, will both be run Friday, May 31st, on a card that also includes two Pennsylvania bred stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 15th.
If you're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.